Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Josh. I mean, we're here talking about FPL, and this is a great space for me to get some things off of my chest, because in my real life, like most of you listening, you don't have people to talk about FPL. Right. So real quick, I had a dream over the Christmas holiday about Jordan Ayew. And did you see that goal that Jordan Ayew scored where he basically did a Cruyff turn into the six-yard box
Yes.
and then a cheeky little dink?
I did see that goal.
After I saw that goal, I went to bed, and immediately I went to bed after seeing that goal. It made me so tired. I had this dream that in the following match, Jordan Ayew scored a goal by dribbling the ball into the goal and running through the net. And the commentary in my dream was going crazy, like, Jordan Ayew scores. He's run through the net. Oh, my, you've never seen anything like it. And it was incredible. And I woke up from that dream thinking, boy, I hope wow. I live to see the day when somebody actually scores
so,
and runs
so
subsequently runs through the net.
Was it like a cutout shape of the like a body, you know, like one of those, like a chalk outline?
Yeah, it was a little more like David Copperfield. Like, how did he do that? That's incredible.
that's pretty good fantasy dream. By the way, this is the Always Cheating Podcast brought to you by Untuckit, Brandon. I forgot to mention that earlier. Okay, game week 20 in the books, kind of a weird one. Almost mm-hmm. everybody went two or three deep onto their bench. Scores were okay, all things considered, but yeah. Kind of an unpleasant watching experience a lot of the time. even you know, when you would someone like Marcus Rashford came through with 9 points. I mean, you had to sweat through 95 minutes of not particularly pleasant football, you know, in order to get there. Obviously, you had the utter destruction. We have to give Brendan Rodgers credit, by the way. He did telegraph this. I mean, we don't always believe these men. It's like the boy who cried rotation or something. You know, it's like you hear it so often, you don't think it's actually going to happen. But then it was like, oh, wow, he just fielded an entirely different 11 for this match. Yeah. And so, yeah, I finished on 64 points. It sort of continues a run that I've had that's really good. The last to toot my own horn for a second.
Yeah, really good. You're in the zone. You're in the zone right now.
Yeah, and feeling it a little bit, which is it's a good feeling. I'm up to 85,000 overall, and that is, I think I said something. I think I have like nine green arrows out of the last 11 game weeks or something like that. I was 740,000 after game week 9, so I've moved up about 800 or whatever that is, 650 spots since then. And I've been getting the captaincies right. I moved to Mane a couple of weeks ago when kind of everyone was going solid. I think that really helped me as well. I did captain Mane today too. I'm feeling good. I brought in Danny Ings this game week too. A good game week, but you know, even again, you know, good final score in the end, a little bit of a green arrow this game week, but I also had to suffer through a minus one from Aurier. I mean, that Spurs, did you watch the Spurs match, by the way?
I did. Yeah.
What an awful match.
The Spurs team is really interesting since Jose arrived, in that it's just kind of been this bubble that has been expanding and expanding, and they're eking out these results without any clean sheets, and they seem to just be doing it by happenstance.
Yeah.
And you just feel like the Spurs bubble, I don't know if it's going to burst, if it has already burst, if it actually never existed.
Right.
But to watch Spurs is to be completely confounded by what's going on there. I mean, I think Daniel Levy got what he paid for when he switched managers. At least Spurs are getting points on the table. But as far as FPL is concerned, yeah, I still have more questions than answers with Spurs.
It's hard to feel good. I mean, yeah, they were a little shorthanded yesterday for sure. But, you know, that Brighton match is kind of the same way, where they won 2-1 and it felt like it took everything they had to win that match. And I sort of felt the same way with this 2-2 draw. It took everything they had to do it. And, you know, you just don't want a real top seed, you know, a team where maybe you're going to have two or three fantasy assets to be working so hard just to get a draw or a win. It doesn't usually mean that the fantasy, you know, that they're a great fantasy team. And I think, you know, having Serge Aurier, I mean, that's just like just kind of chalk that one up to a, terrible, ill-considered decision. I mean, all the other players I was considering, no one did well. I mean, it's not like there's like some secret, you know, defender out there who's just doing incredibly. It's all kind of boom or bust, you know. I mean, I know you brought in Sidibe this week too, which is, I thought that was a creative move, and didn't work out this game week, but, you know, maybe it will long term. So why don't you talk a little bit about your team, Brennan?
Yeah, I had two transfers going into game week 20, and I dropped Dele Alli for James Maddison, who was benched, and also brought in Sidibe for Gilbert on Aston Villa. So on the whole, that was a plus 0.1, or a plus 1 point for me in game week 20. So I'm going to take that as a win. And I finished on 56 points, two above the 54-point average, which I thought was actually pretty high considering all the grief with rotation. I think what you were saying was there was no real runaway standout performer in game week 20. You think about game week 19, and it was Trent Alexander-Arnold's game week with that masterful performance.
Yep.
And we didn't have that in game week 20. So I was just like scratching and clawing points wherever I could get them. The good news for me in game week 20 was I have been kind of suffering the last couple of weeks with Rashford and Tammy Abraham up front. And I tried to go really powerful with Tammy and Rashford and Vardy, and I haven't been able to turn those guys into any kind of differential. So at least I got goals from them. Mm-hmm. That Rashford goal in the 95th minute, basically the last kick of the game, I wasn't able to watch that match. So I had our friend James. I said, I know you're watching. Text me if Rashford does anything. And I have occasionally gotten messages from James where it's like, Matt Ryan with a penalty save. Oh, my God. And he's trolling me. Right. He will totally do that. So he said, Rashford, last kick of the game. He's taking in all three bonus points. I thought he was having a laugh, but he wasn't. So that was actually a pretty good feeling. But I put the armband on Mo Salah this week. He's a player I brought in going into game week 19. And yeah, as you say, it's like as Mane goes up, Salah goes down. And, you know, I'm kind of banking on Mane going down and Salah going up at some point in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, on the whole, I guess I'm feeling good about my transfers. Maddison for Leicester. Leicester have a pretty decent run opening up for them now. And I'm feeling good about the Leicester triple up with Vardy, Maddison, and Soyuncu. And yes, Sidibe. We'll talk a bit about Everton later on in the podcast, so I can get into that in a bit more detail.
Yeah, it's interesting. They sort of weathered the storm. not particularly well, I have to say. You know, they lost away to City, lost really bad at home to Liverpool, and then they did win away to West Ham, although it didn't really help in a fantasy from a fantasy point of view. But as you said, it's like the past is the past, and now they're about to play Newcastle, Southampton, Burnley, and West Ham in their next four. I mean, it's a great run of fixtures. Even Chelsea in game week 25, I'd consider a pretty good fixture as well. So, I'm with you. I'm actually thinking about maybe bringing in another Leicester defender, possibly an Aurier out for somebody, maybe Chilwell replacement. So, Brandon, as we move on from game week 20, that Joe guy says, are there any lessons to be learned from this game week, or do we just throw it to the fires of FPL folklore? I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tried and true lesson that we always talk about, but just making sure you have players on your bench. I mean, just to point out the obvious, but rotation was so heavy in game week 20. I think people were... you love to see smiles on people's faces when they get a one-pointer from Jimenez coming off of the bench, things like that, where people finally actually value 1 point for 1 point being a note for the positive.
I will say, you could almost argue the counter is true as well, because everything that everybody got off their bench was such utter crap that, you know, maybe you would have been better off just not having anybody on your bench, because when you need them, they don't help anyway. You know, it's like one extra point. Who cares?
Right. I got Diego Rico off my bench for 1 point. I mean, mm-hmm. Soyuncu is a different case in that I wouldn't have wanted to play him. Well, actually, no, I did start him. And yeah. he just didn't play. I'm thinking yeah. of his zero pointer against Liverpool in game week 19. But I take right. your point.
Yeah, we're in that time of the year where all the game weeks are starting to blend together. So I definitely understand. Game week 19 and 20 in particular, they kind of feel like one massive game week. I need a break, by the way. I'm genuinely looking forward to whatever it is, the January 3rd and 4th next weekend with no Premier League. I let's all enjoy it, folks. Like, just take the FA Cup off. Just enjoy a weekend without any Premier League matches.
Pleased to learn that while Trent was getting his hat trick of assists and his goal, I was gleefully watching Little Women in the movie theater with my family. Ooh, so
I want to see that. Yeah. Wow.
Highly recommended, everyone out there, check out Little Women. It's a controversial opinion, but it's absolutely better than Star Wars.
I don't even think that's controversial, although it's a weird comparison to those two films. Just a couple of quick housekeeping things, Brandon. One is that a double game week has been announced. Game week 24, which is just around the corner, actually. It's a late January game week. Liverpool and West Ham will play their made-up game week 18 fixture. So we will be, it's still a couple of game weeks away. We have, game week just 2 days from now. And so we're going to focus more on the January 1st matches, the next couple of game weeks. But and we have actually a question later. We're going to talk a little bit about it. But rest assured, we will talk more about the double soon. In some ways, I think it's a double game week that doesn't require as much planning, because I don't really know that you're going to want anyone from West Ham, and virtually everybody has two Liverpool players already. And so the question is, which third one do you get? Do you get another midfielder or do you get another defender? And so I think, Hendo. It's pretty...
Yeah, the maybe bring in Henderson. Josh, yeah. You get Hendo. Yeah,
or Wijnaldum. Yeah, Jimmy Milner. I don't know. So we're certainly going to talk about that more in the game weeks to come. But let's also, Brandon, say a quick thank you. We put out the call this month to our patrons, and we asked people to sort of our pledge month. We don't try to hit up the people about Patreon too often, but in December we thought we would get a little extra push, and the people have really responded in a huge way. And I just want to say a very sincere thank you to everyone who supports the podcast on Patreon, everyone who's become a new patron this month. And Brandon, can you thank our new patrons?
Yeah, I'll just echo those sentiments, Josh, too. Everyone came through. And a big specific thank you to our brand new producer patron, Anton Markov. At the Volkswagen level, we have two new patrons, Chris Connor and Justin Fainter. At the Lord Sorloth tier, thank you to Niall, Mark Iyer, Jonas Lindstrom. You're going to go far with that name, kid. Andrew King, slightly different spelling, though, I'll note. Andrew King, Matthew Ashenden, Jonathan Smith Isaacson. And one brilliant patron at the Pookie level, Nicholas Bargerman. Thank you all for your support.
Yep. As Brendan said, if you thank you for the support. If you'd like to get a bonus podcast each week, I did record a Boxing Day podcast, Brandon. Not my best. Had been drinking, watching the Boxing Day matches, but we do an extra podcast each week, though, usually sober. And you also get access to the Slack and our private mini leagues and things like that. So go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to find out more and sign up. Brandon, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get back and talk about what we've learned from the festive fixtures and how it can help us moving forward.
I need some help. Thank you.
All right, Brandon, we're back. And we have a lot of questions from people who are thinking about playing an early wild card or starting to get a little stressed out about where they are overall rank-wise. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what we've learned from the festive fixtures and how it might help you and I, anyone out there is listening, moving forward. And I know that you're, just before we even get into the questions, but I know that you're kind of feeling this way right now. And so just tell me, like, I know a lot of managers, a lot of very experienced managers are in the same position you are right now, where you're kind of like, what is going on? Like, where am I this season? I mean, I think one time in all the years that you've been playing, you finished outside the top 100K. Right now it just hasn't really been happening for you. So are you stressed? Are you trying to think about being different? I mean, where are you sort of mentally right now?
Yeah, I do think it's fair to say that I am stressed. I mean, if you look back at my overall rank going back to game week 15, I'm basically exactly where I was at game week 15. So, I think I'm just trying to think about FPL in any way I can that doesn't cause me to get frustrated, because I think that is probably our biggest enemy right now is just flat frustration.
Yeah.
And when that frustration creeps in, the result is FPL stops being fun, watching the matches stops being fun, talking to your friends about their teams and listening to podcasts can be less enjoyable. So it's like my first primary mission is to not let that frustration creep in. And I'm really also done racking my brain to try and figure out where I keep going wrong. And I don't want to blame bad luck, but it seems like there have been a handful of 50-50 decisions that I've just gotten wrong, that haven't gone my way.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I think captaincy fails have just plagued me from game week two onward. So I think that has sort of been, you know, always lingering in the background and holding any huge overall rank boost for me. And then the one thing that I'm like really thinking about now and thinking about how I can improve going forward this season is just throwing the hallmark idea of patience totally out the window. Mm-hmm. I feel like this season I have not been acting fast, and going forward, I feel like I need to act fast, fast. I need
the famous two transfers carried over.
As you're fond of noting on the podcast, this is like the season where I have done this more than I ever have, is carrying two frees and just kind of hemming and hawing. And I do feel like I have jumped on certain players at the right time, like Jamie Vardy or even Jack Grealish. And the Jamie Vardy one definitely helped me. Like, God knows where my season would be right now if I didn't get Jamie Vardy in around game week five.
Yeah.
So that is like, I can at least point to that as like, I still have a certain caliber of FPL brain inside of my head. So I'm thinking of ways where I could just start moving faster going forward.
I think that'll make sense. I mean, I think the one thing that I think happened for you, and it probably happened to a lot of other managers out there, which is, you know, you went all in on Man City, and it turned out that the way to go was to have at least one Liverpool midfielder, you know? And I think that was what really hurt you for a long stretch there. And then you sort of get kind of locked in, because when you've got players like Raheem Sterling and Sergio Aguero, I mean, it's hard to ever let go of them, because you know what they're capable of. I mean, Sterling had 20 points the first game week of the season, and Aguero's had double digit returns many times this year. So I think that was probably, if I were to point it, you know, just from the outside looking in, that to me is the one thing that I think probably hurt you the most, you know? And so,
do you think that that's been one of the big surprises of this season, is how the points have really dried up for Manchester City?
Yeah, that's it is surprising. I mean, this isn't like it's not like Pep is like a, you know, like Jurgen Klopp's last season at Dortmund, this kind of happened, you know, where they sort of, I mean, obviously Man City's still in what, they're in second place, or maybe they're in third. I mean, they're, you know, neck and neck with Leicester right now. But, you know, Jurgen Klopp's last season, it was like they just kind of tuned him out, and it just wasn't working any longer. And they had won two league titles there as well, you know? And so, it seems like it must be Pep is like the best manager in the world. And so it's not like, you know, he's not a manager you just sack like he's like Mark Hughes or something. But don't you kind of also feel like
great, I love that, you know,
or whoever. But don't you kind of feel like if they just like had somebody, if somebody new came in like next week, that suddenly they'd be winning games like 7-0? Like, it just somehow they would, like, you know, because they're so talented still. I mean, the defensive issue has been a real problem. I think that's like, that's just caught them out so much and probably forced him to be a little funky with his rotations and formations. And I don't know. So, yeah, it's kind of like it's just a weird self-own there too, because, you know, I mean, all they really are out now is Laporte, right? I mean, it's not like they have tons of injuries up and down that team, do they? I mean, it's just,
they actually have a ton of defenders that they can play. I mean, Garcia came in today,
and
they've got fullbacks. Zinchenko is now healthy again, and Mendy is healthy again. It's really just Leroy Sané that you would point to as one of the big missing pieces. But my question is, not to veer too far from FPL, but it's clear to me that this team is going to be broken up in the summer, and I feel like there's a 0% chance that Pep is back next season. Hmm. What happens to Kevin De Bruyne in this scenario? Is he playing at Manchester City next season?
Jeez, that's a depressing thought. I mean, because it's not like he's not going to go to like Chelsea or something, you know?
He will leave the Premier League, yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to think about that yet. He's too great. And I mean, at the time it would be right, because he's probably going to break the assist record this season too. He's at 14, and as we found out earlier today, 20 is the record from Thierry Henry. So definitely in play for him. I don't know if those 14 are all real assists. You know, sometimes a fantasy assist is not quite the same thing as
like going down for a penalty, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Winning a free kick. So, but regardless, he's going to finish on more than 20 assists. You would I think safely assume with what 19 game weeks to go that he, or 18 definitely. Game weeks, whatever it is, that he's going to score 6 assists or more. I hope he doesn't leave, but I think it's possible. I mean, the team clearly needs a shakeup, from everybody, like from the central midfield on down. It feels like, I mean, the Phil Foden thing is weird too. I mean, I know we're way off the fantasy track now, but like, why doesn't Foden ever play? Like, he's apparently amazing, and yet. Yeah. Like, this would have been the perfect game week to play him, right? It would have made complete sense. So I don't know. It's a strange one. So should we move on to some questions here? Yeah.
let's do it. Let's do it. I see the first question is from FPL Governor, and it actually speaks directly to me. He wants to know, 2 Salah captaincy blanks in a row, and my overall rank is shot to pieces. Am I living in denial by sticking with Mo over Mane? So... You're in the zone right now, Josh. You've been making critical decision after critical decision, and you were able to stick with Salah to the point where you got some huge differential point hauls from him over Mane, and then you knew the right time to switch from Salah to Mane. Now, here I am with Salah, and my thinking in bringing in Salah 2 weeks ago was, as we had discussed on the pod, he has a lower ownership than Mane, and it's just sort of like a quick and easy way to get a slightly bigger rank increase if your Salah pick is outscoring Mane.
Yeah. If they're roughly equal fantasy assets, then when in doubt, go with the lower owned player. Right, that's like a classic, strategic move.
My feeling here is I can't overthink this. I mean, I understand I was just talking about I need to move fast. Does moving fast in this situation mean I need to be swerving between Mo and Mane? And I don't think that's the case. I think it's basically going to be – like if you go back and do a stats comparison between Mo and Mane – over the last 2 game weeks, obviously, Mane has surpassed Mo in stats. If you go back 4 weeks, Salah was outpacing Mane. And this is just going to be the way it goes all season. So I think there will be points like maybe when you play your wild card, or we're going to talk about this double game week coming up in 24, will you have a pivot point where you can move between Liverpool midfielders. But as it is right now, I think you just have to dance with the Liverpool midfielder that you brought.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking with Mo Salah.
It's a frustrating thing with him where it's like, what is the deal with his like inability to finish? You know, is it form? Is it, you know, I mean, he could chalk up the ankle before he got injured, and then, but it's like, I don't know, how does he come in with any points? It feels like he had just a ton of chances to rack up, you know, goals in particular, you know, as well as a couple of assists. He had a big volleyed chance in the Leicester game and had some chances today. And it just feels like it's not quite clicking. And then you're like, is this, I don't know. So Mane, it seems like he doesn't get as many chances, but he's finishing a lot better, you know? And so, so it's just interesting because it's like, you know, you look at these like, you know, stat tables or whatever, and it's like, Mane, you know, is consistently below Salah in terms of like projected points and things like that. But it just, Salah just doesn't seem to be like taking his chances as well.
Yeah, I think you're right that Mane does. He's like Jamie Vardy caliber of here's my chance. I'm going to take it. Boom, we're in.
Yeah.
And Mo, it's like now you're at the point where whenever James Milner is subbed onto the pitch, all the air is sucked out of the room because you think the only way Salah was going to score points in that Wolves match today was if somebody won a penalty and he was able to take it because
Mane was trying to help him. How many times did Mane fall down this match? Like looking for a free kick pen. It was,
So I think there it just kind of depends on the defense. Some fullbacks have Salah's number and they just tackle the crap out of him. And I think he was pretty well marked out of the second half of that Wolves match. In the first half, he got some chances and he just needed to take them. But
yeah, just to, I guess just to go back to your question. Yeah, I think you do just have to go with, I mean, if you were in a position or if, you know, given where we are in the season too, I feel like I've got a lot of problems and decisions to make. And it feels like a luxury. There are times during the season where everything's kind of cruising. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess just like another way to phrase it would be like, if you were wildcarding this game week, would you have Mane or Salah or both?
Well, now I think it has to be both. And we can sort of preview our double game week chat. But I think for me, the way I plan to play that double game week is to get both Mo and Mane. And, you know, given what we were saying about Manchester City, where are the premium midfielder assets that are delivering? And I think you look back at the last 10 seasons or so, and you're used to sort of going for this variety in the premium bracket. There are at least three or four great premium midfielders that you want to choose from.
Yeah.
And maybe we're not thinking about Son just because he's on this red card suspension, but it's not happening anywhere else but Liverpool. So why overthink it? Why not just get both of these? And it's just like that desire to have three strikers up front that's kind of holding us back because of the budget. If I was limited to just one of these Liverpool midfielders, I don't know. I feel like where I am right now, needing to claw back some rank, I think I still would go for Mo Salah and just have that belief that he's going to start delivering in the next game week.
Yeah, I feel like I would, I don't know. I mean, I kind of made my decision, right? Sorry, are you okay?
I'm fine. Yeah, thanks.
I'm sure you're fine, but I just, I had to say it, right? Sort of instinctive. I didn't even think about what I was saying as I said.
Are you choking? Are you okay?
I care about you, Brandon. I need to make sure you're okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess I did make the decision to go with Mane just because his form this entire Premier League season has just been incredible. And yeah, I just think his finishing is so good. And so, I think I'm with you. I think if I were wildcarding right now, I would set up my team so that I would have both of them. As it is, I don't think I will have both of them going to game 8-24. I actually think the easier way – it's funny because when we first started talking about this, I was like, well, I think it's pretty binary. Either you bring in your other midfielder or you bring in a second defender. But I actually wonder if there's maybe a Firmino approach that would make sense. Yeah, where maybe – I don't know. I think he's a potential option. I think that especially because the two fixtures in 24 are – they're both away fixtures, right? They play away to Wolves and away to West Ham. I don't know. I'm not sure that I see two clean sheets there. And so maybe Firmino he's such a risky player because it seems like he's so, you know, he can have these stretches where he just blanked, you know, he blanked, was it six game weeks in a row from game week 7 to 12. But I just worry that if I set up my team to bring in, you know, both Mane and Salah, then I'm in a position where I've got like Greenwood and another 4.5 play. You know, it's like I got my whole team just for one game week, and you know, I'm just not sure that that's worth it. So, anyway, that's you know, food for thought for another podcast. AJ says, "Who are some guys no one is talking about that we should look at as the fixtures pile up and things become a little as the fixture pile up ends? That is, things become a little more normal." Aubameyang, Aguero, Paul Pogba. Well, Pogba's a no, right?
How did that happen? How did that Pogba bandwagon just build up a head of steam so quickly?
I just
like Pogba. He was clearly put in the shop window for whatever sale is happening in January. There's no way that this guy is playing after the January window closes.
I think there's just a lot of Man United fans out there, and they were just excited to.
Be too. I mean, Pogba's a fantastic player, and I was talking with our friend Danny Bean's dad, who is a United fan, and he was saying Pogba is the midfielder that United is missing and in desperate need of right now.
Yeah, But we cast your mind back like a month ago, and the guy's walking with a cane. You know, like, so like, clearly he's not a trustworthy, you know, fantasy asset right now. Aubameyang is interesting. And that one is, you know, not to like relitigate the past, but I know there was a moment where you were considering Aubameyang a few game weeks ago. And yeah. He's kind of, you know, it's a tough fit, especially because Jamie Vardy is kind of in that Aubameyang slot in some ways, if you're thinking about your team in a certain kind of way. But I mean, at some point, Aubameyang has to start entering the conversation, right? I mean, I think he is now what he is, the like fourth highest point to, yeah. You know, fourth. He has the fourth highest point total in the season so far. He's got 13 goals, 3 assists. He's basically fixture proof. They've got a new manager. I don't know if I really necessarily think they're playing better under Arteta. I did watch their match away to Bournemouth, and I thought they looked okay. The problem is they just don't really have the talent. You know, I'm not even sure if it's even if they work really hard, I just don't know if they have what it takes, because they're just playing all these super young guys, you know, who just like they're bloodying all these like, you know, these young players. So, I mean, if you're counting on Saka and Willock and Nelson and these other players to – you know, to do anything really, it's probably not going to work. But through it all, Aubameyang just keeps scoring.
He does. And watching Arsenal against Chelsea, it was interesting to see kind of two similar teams. I guess Chelsea has a handful more veterans in their starting 11 than Arsenal does, but Arsenal looked pretty good in moments during that first half, but yeah, it was the age-old story of their defense is just absolutely shocking at Arsenal, and Mustafi and Leno just gave that game to Chelsea. Do you think the potential is there, at least for them, to get goals? And I do like that Arteta is playing Lacazette with Aubameyang. He's trying to make that work. And you could argue that is actually a disadvantage to Aubameyang, because Lacazette has to play more centrally and it pushes Aubameyang out to the left. But it doesn't seem to be having a negative effect at this point with two goals and two.
Yeah.
So it's one to watch. Yeah. But I kind of do have that opinion of, Arsenal aren't playing any better. And while Aubameyang has been he's been consistent through this season with the 13 goals, are these single point hauls. Let's see, over the course of the season, he's had just 3 double digit returns, and at a premium price tag of 10.8, when you have players like Jimenez and Tammy Abraham and Rashford,
who my boy are Danny Ings
pulling equal, and Danny Ings, your new best friend, it's lovely. I'm just not convinced that Aubameyang is worth it. I just think that Arsenal have to get to a new level before I can consider that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to put it. I will, you know, but if you're trying to be different, you know, I mean, this is, you know, I think AJ said, you know, who's nobody talking about? I mean, Aubameyang, we're certainly talking about him as a great player, but I don't know, it doesn't seem like he's being talked about enough as a possible difference maker in your team. Although, as you said, I mean, is he quite explosive enough? I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is the problem with playing the catch up game, is you don't get to bring in Kevin De Bruyne and have him be the difference maker. You've got to gamble on some of these players. You know, as you were talking about, I was just sort of thinking about, you know, what is a real way to gain ground? And, you know, it feels like a formation change can be one way to do it. It's almost like you need to like look at your team or look at the whole fantasy landscape and decide like what player is going to kill you if they do super well, right? What player is capable of like huge explosive returns, is highly owned. And then really just those two, right? Who's highly owned and capable of explosive returns? So if I look at, you know, various players out there, it's De Bruyne, it's Trent, it's Jamie Vardy, and maybe just those three. Sadio Mane is like borderline. And everyone else doesn't fit into that category. You can almost ignore everybody else, right? Marcus Rashford, you can probably ignore him, you know? I mean, he keeps doing well, but, you know, safely you can still get away with it. I think I don't know, like Jimenez, their ownership isn't high enough, you know, just these various players. And so none of those players are going to really hurt you, you know, James Maddison, like if none of those players are really going to hurt you if they do well, then those are the players you don't have to worry about coverage with any of those players. You know, it's like just pick the biggest ones, and then because you always need a little bit of defensive, you know, like just blocking maneuvers, right? Yeah. Just make sure like you're covered. Right. But if you do that, then don't worry about the formation. Like maybe, you know, as long as you've got like those three players covered, or, you know, whoever you decide fits in that category, then you could be really creative with everybody else, because even if you miss out on, you know, Jimenez points haul or whatever, it's just not going to hurt you enough for you to feel like you need that kind of coverage. And so I do think that's maybe one way to think about it, you know, in terms of making up ground.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say. I mean, the other way to look at it is these are you're mentioning players like Jimenez or Rashford or Mane. They are getting points. I mean, this is kind of runs in tandem with what we were saying about Aubameyang. You can't really ignore them. Who else is getting as many points?
Right.
As it's sort of like we're starting to build the perfect team. It's like, okay, yeah, you have to have Vardy, you have to have Trent, and you have to have Kevin De Bruyne. Well, right, so then like, I think you ought to have Jimenez. I think you ought to have Mane. I think you ought to have at least those two. Yeah.
But just like if you were going to go really funky, let's say that you were just like, you were going to win a card early, or you just, you know, or you were going to burn some points or whatever, and you just wanted to be bold, then like maybe one way to do it is you have like 35 million up front and you've got Harry Kane, Aubameyang, and Jamie Vardy. Right. And you're just going to go for it with those. And like, that is like I feel like when people are talking about being bold, sometimes it's like, well, I'm going to bring in Traore. Like, and that's my like idea of being bold. You know, it's like that will help you. But if you really, if you're really going to be bold, that would be one way to do it. It's just spend like all your money up front. You could still have KDB. You could still have Trent. You know, you're going to have a really cheap midfield and defense outside of those two. But, you know, there is, you know, and there, I don't know. So like there are ways to do it, I think. And Harry Kane in particular, I think, is just because he's so fixture proof and, you know, secretly not having a horrible, horrible season. He's got 11 goals of the season, you know, scored in the last two. So, I mean, I don't want him, but, you know, he is an option for sure.
Yeah. I think another thing to look out for when you're looking at these bold moves is there is the temptation, like you were saying, with Traore, somebody like Riyad Mahrez. And I think if you're looking to differentiate and gain ground, I do think you're better off limiting yourself to people who you know are guaranteed to start week in, week out. And that's my concern with players, with trying to get too cheeky with a player like Mahrez, who might not be consistent, but he might not start. So that leads me to, I think Everton is a team that we're going to start talking more and more about, especially if they keep on the trajectory that they're on since the last 4 weeks. But Richarlison is someone who he hasn't really responded to the Duncan Ferguson or Ancelotti manager bounce. It's been Dominic Calvert-Lewin who has responded.
Yeah.
That could change. I mean, Richarlison is still locked into that starting lineup, and I think that he is someone that you can consider for the coming weeks who could just help you have a bit of a rank bounce.
Yeah. I think the other one, this will be a popular pick, but Heung-min Son is back in game week 22. He's down to 6.2% ownership and his price is 9.8 million. So, you know, talk about a player who get double digit returns. He already has done it four times on the season. You know, if you can handle his violent outbursts, then
this perhaps the Joey most violent Barton, player in the entire league,
the smiling jackal. It's so bizarre. It's a
he's so, like the Joker, basically. So, why so serious? He says to everyone.
Game week 22 when he comes back, maybe not the best match. They play Liverpool, but they play Watford and Norwich in the two matches after that, and I'm sure they're going to be pushed for the Champions League and, you know, for next year's Champions League. And I think that he's going to start a ton of matches. Also, he'll also be like the most well-rested player, you know, among that squad. And so he'll have no excuse for getting rested moving forward. So, you know, again, if you're thinking about being different, I think bringing Son back in, especially because there's like a kind of instinctive feeling that we all have, which is like after Son like kind of screws everybody. I mean, I had him captained. That podcast, by the way, that we did the Saturday before that match is now like it's basically like a comedy podcast. Like, it's like we both captained him the next day. We went on about whether he was a good captain option for game week 19. It was just like, it was amazing how that worked out. But
some of the best improv we've done, Josh.
Yeah. And it was just because of the timing, because we were traveling the next day. But yeah, I think that Sun, you know, there's a feeling that a lot of people have where it's like, it's painful to bring someone like that right back into your team, you know, because it's just so, because he screwed you. But I think that you just have to be kind of not take it personally, you know, and just accept that he's a great fantasy asset and that he's, you know, a player that you know, could be a real difference maker moving forward.
Sure. All right. So let's move on to a question here from Simple Goal, who asks, if you were wildcarding now, which three forwards would you choose? So we talked about some sort of funky lineups going big with Kane, Aubameyang, Vardy. This is something that we're going to have to talk more and more about as we talk about the Liverpool double game week and whether you go super premium Liverpool in your midfield. That would require you to basically go two strikers up front.
Yep.
So you've come off of this turmoil with Lys Mousset, who, you know, had subsequent benching or consecutive benchings.
Right.
And you seem to be pretty fed up with that. Could you see a future in this season in which you go to two strikers?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I just don't like it. And I don't really know why you'd want to do that right now, given how many goals you're getting out of the strikers, right? I mean, Danny Ings, it isn't always like this, you know. I mean, going into the season, people were like, oh, I wish I could field zero strikers, you know. Like, there are seasons where it is not like this. But I mean, Danny Ings, you know, is a 6 million player. He's up to 6.6 million now. He's got, you know, 12 goals in the season. You know, Raul Jimenez is 7.5 million and he's got 8 goals and 6 assists on the year. So I could see it happening, but I don't see it as a great strategy. The only thing that would change my mind is if Mason Greenwood, you know, if Rashford or Martial got injured and Mason Greenwood became a semi-regular starter, like a starter you could trust to have in your team, then maybe I would consider it. But otherwise, I feel like the second I go away from three, you know, strikers, I'm trying to get back to it. And maybe that's just a personal style thing. But could you see yourself with two strikers?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I definitely, if my midfield called for it, I wouldn't have a huge issue going for two strikers. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I just think there's so much choice at various different budget options up front right now. Where,
yeah, I mean, there's like three. I agree. I mean, I wish I could field like four or five. I mean, I don't have Rashford on my team right now. And even someone like Timo Pukki is, you know, we're not even talking about him, right? But he's got 9 goals in the season as well. You know, so there's lots of interesting options up front. But yeah, if I were to pick just three, I would actually probably go with the three that I have right now. I have Vardy, Jimenez, and Ings. I just brought in Anthony Martial. If I hadn't done that, I guess for my own team, I would probably, you know, I probably put Marcus Rashford in there. I think he's a great option too. It doesn't quite fit my team structure. Yeah, I like him a lot as well. And yeah, but I'll stick with the three that I have right now. I mean, Jimenez in particular, now that he's got his rest, I think he's a player that I just really, he's just an incredible player. I mean, that Wolves Man City match was incredible because I spent the first half of it in a complete VAR induced rage coma. Like I was just sitting on my couch, just feeling like, okay, this is it. Like there's no, like the sport is done until they fix this. And then the second half was so, cause it was just like, it was like the crowd was taken out of it, you know, like everyone was shell shocked. It wasn't football, you know, it was just like these gremlins just kept coming in and taking over the match. And it was just awful. And so, and then the second half was so thrilling, you know, when, you know, Man City get the second goal and then Wolves claw back and score 3 and that late goal from Matt Doherty. And it was just incredible. It was so exciting and so thrilling. And, you know, it helped that I had Jimenez on my team, but even if I didn't, it was just such a fun, interesting match. And so, in the second half anyway, and so what is my point? My point is just that Raul Jimenez is incredible. And so is Traore for that matter.
Yeah. Traore continues to be the dopest guy in the entire Premier League. There's no question about that. But Yeah, I agree on Jimenez. I think that he's bordering on essential at this point. And it's one of those wonderful stories of it's rare you see a player like at that rung where Jimenez is, where he continues his form from one season to the next. It's like, it's Clint Dempsey-esque. Gosh, I think is what it is.
He's just so complete, you know. He can really, really passes well now too, and his positioning seems. I mean, it's not that I even like know how to gauge good positioning. It just seems like his positioning is incredible too. And yeah, I mean, he's got 8 goals and 6 assists in the season. I mean, you know, he's actually at his starting price on the season, $7.5 million. His ownership is under 20%. He's probably going to finish on something like 14 goals and 10 assists or something like that. I mean, it's an incredible return for a 7.5 million player. So I think I'm with you. I think he is borderline essential too. And
Further to what you were saying about him, and as I was thinking about him in relation to Tammy Abraham and how Tammy, he's had a decent season, but he gets into the box and he basically posts up. And he gets the ball into a shooting position. And Jimenez, he's just a more well-rounded – that sounds a bit basic. But basically, Jimenez receives the ball, and then he has so many different things that he can do with it. And I think it helps that Jimenez is much more mobile with the ball than somebody like Tammy Abraham. You get Jimenez the ball, and he can dribble, pass, and shoot. And you see other strikers like him that are only really able to either shoot or lay off.
Yep.
And I just really respect how Jimenez has that vision. He has the mobility, and he can play an actual pass as opposed to just like a Giroux-esque backboard layoff.
Even like year over year, it feels like he's improved a lot. You know, it feels like maybe just because he's been with the players longer. And I think Tammy could get there, but Jimenez is like 20. He's like in the perfect age for a striker. You know, where he's still is super experienced, but young enough that he still has still has his legs. You know, and all that stuff. So. All right. So, Sharklar asked if it was time to talk about Traore. Let's talk about him. I mean, he's awesome. I want him. I want him in my team. He's great. Is there anything more to say? I mean, I'm completely convinced.
Yeah. Classic fantasy asset where he's good enough that where you want him on your team, and he's cool enough that you actually feel excited to have him, to watch him, and when he returns, it's all the more sweet. So yeah, it's like discovering a delicious cookie at a new bakery, and you tell all your friends, like, go try this cookie, it's really good, you won't regret it.
Yeah.
So you heard it here first. Traore is like a cookie.
Yeah, he figured it out. It's awesome. All right, let's take one more question, Brandon. Let's take a break. A couple questions about Chelsea, whether they're a classic good bad team. Josh Morden said, for players who jumped off the Chelsea bandwagon a while ago, is it time to look back at the great value assets there? And then Benno says, Brandon, will you hold Abraham or will you look elsewhere? And you talked about Tammy a little bit already, but are you the Abraham to Jimenez move? Is that one you're considering now? Is that on the table? Possible move?
Yeah, I think it's almost a dead certainty that that's the one I make moving into game week 21. I mean, you know, you mentioned that Jimenez had his rest on top of the fact that he's in great form. And Watford have this great or Wolves have this, I mean, let's call it a decent away fixture to Watford. Watford look a little bit rejuvenated under Nigel Pearson, but you really do have to like Jimenez in that match, and Jimenez definitely fixture proof. So yeah, I think Tammy, it's like what I was saying about Spurs at the start of the podcast. Like, so the bubble is kind of burst there, and it's like, okay, it's a combination of what I was saying about Spurs and what you were saying, Josh, about sort of covering yourself with these inessential players. And Chelsea have like rapidly moved from an essential value FPL team to a, you just don't have to worry about these guys.
Yeah.
Tammy and Mount and the like, they'll probably continue to tick along, but in such a like a low dose way that I'm not afraid. And I'm ready to move on.
Yeah. And I think, and again, I mean, it's moving from Tammy to Jimenez. I mean, he's about half as owned as Tammy, and he's also a little bit cheaper than Tammy is as well. So it's I think there's a lot of reasons to recommend that move. I mean, it's just Chelsea is a team that's young, it's still figuring itself out. I'm avoiding that whole team as well. I just don't trust them to be consistent. I mean, Tammy, 12 goals and 3 assists in the season. Great year for Tammy. Just scored this last game week, but just every game week you're looking at the team sheet, you don't know who's going to start. It seems like there's like a new handful of defenders that seem to be playing every match. You know, it feels like kind of a mess right now. And so, just won away to Arsenal, so congrats to them, but I'm not sure what that says about them, because Arsenal are kind of in the same boat. So, all right, Brian, let's take a quick break. We have a short lightning round to come, and we're going to talk after that about game week 21.
Josh, while I was home visiting my parents, I had this discussion about making the bed. And are you a person who tucks the sheets into the foot of the bed, or are you one who untucks the sheets so that your feet can sort of...
Very much an untucker, very much so.
So I've got a deal for you, Josh. This is totally unrehearsed. So if you're an untucker in bed and you're trying to move into the untucked lifestyle sort of beyond the bedroom, check out the Untuck It shirt. I mean, have you ever seen an untucked button down? Typically they look really bad. Now, why is that? It's because they typically aren't meant to be worn that way. They're long, they've got like the long tails, and it just looks ill-fitting. So that's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the original button-down shirt that is actually designed to be worn untucked. You and I, we both got Untuck It shirts from the people at Untuck It, and it's not like this is a shirt that's designed for sloppy men. No, it actually fits really well all over your upper body, and you look
but not a slim fit, which I don't like. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is not like a bro fit shirt. This is just like you're a normal person who goes to work and you like to look nice, but you also like to be comfortable. And we both love our shirts. Yep. So yeah, like take it from us. Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, athletic guys of all ages. Go to untuckit.com and find your favorite Untuck It style, or check out their 80 brick and mortar stores. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button down, super soft flannels, outerwear, more. Their website, it's super easy to use, and they even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your exact fit. Okay, so whether you're shopping for the perfect present, you're doing some late Christmas shopping or just shopping for yourself.
MLK Day's coming up soon.
Yeah, lots of reasons to give the gift of shirts. Just try to craft you're just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own. Untuck It is definitely the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use the code BLUE, BLUE, for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com, untuckit.com, and the promo code BLUE for 20% off.
All right, Brandon, we're back. We have a 2-question lightning round this time around. I finally discovered that the secret to getting us to do an actual short lightning round is to not have like 11 questions in it.
Smart thinking. You
heard the big news today, right? There's a new man at West Ham. The West Ham fans are overjoyed. I think their parades have been scheduled. A lot of excitement about this. Welcome David Moyes back to West Ham.
Oh my God. I mean, have West Ham fans had a single good thing to cheer for since they moved to London Stadium? I mean, what an absolute cluster.
The last time he was there, they just ended it like whatever. It was like they didn't fire him. It was just like the season ended and they were like, we're good. Like, go do something else. We're fine.
Yeah. Thanks, David. You're kind of gross. You're kind of creeping everyone out, but we did stay up, so that's great. See you later.
FPL Wannabe says, Fabianski, West Ham, and the new manager bounce. Is he an option?
Okay, oof. You always put the challenge out, right? Mm-hmm. Lightning round question, 30 seconds or less.
Yeah.
I got you, Wannabe. No, he's not an option.
I don't think
Fabianski,
so either.
He's doing Fabianski things. He's saving penalties, but nothing. How's this for a transition? Fabianski saving penalties, but nothing is going to save this West Ham team from just being absolute crap.
It's pretty good, actually, Brandon. That's not bad.
Thank you.
Fabianski is a great penalty saver. I mean, the second Damari Gray stepped up there, you were like, oh, this is not going to happen. But the fact that Leicester played... so they basically, I think Johnny Evans was the only player who actually, you know, like as a starter on that team who played in this match. And so they, you know, they fielded a team of backups and they still beat West Ham on the road. Obviously that did get their manager fired, but is the new manager bump going to make their defense better? The thing about their defense, and I know this is later on here, but there are good players in that defense. Like there are players that I rate pretty highly. And so, yeah. I mean, Ogbonna, Diop, these are good defenders. And Aaron Cresswell, had some injury issues, and obviously Fabianski too. So I'm not completely closing the door on some kind of bump taking place, but it doesn't look good. I'll say that.
Yeah.
No, it does.
I think that's very, that's very reasonably and diplomatically put. So I applaud that. All right. Our last lightning round question comes from, I want Adama's body.
Okay.
Jesus, has there ever been a truer screen name than that? The question is, what are your New Year's resolutions, both fantasy and in real life? Is one of your resolutions, Josh, to get Adama Traore's body?
No, although one of them is to, I've decided I'm not going to listen to podcasts anymore at the gym because I find that they do. This is like a really late. I'm giving you a real answer here, which is I'm cutting back on the salty snacks and I'm going to be doing more at the gym itself. I'm going to listen to running music because I find that when I listen to podcasts, I go at like half speed. Like most people, I think you just sort of just listen, you know, and you're sort of like, you might as well be like on a walk, you know, it's so cool. Like it's so slow when you're listening to podcasts. As far as fantasy goes, I think for me, I have to not get too cocky. I think that I can sometimes get a little too like confident in myself and sort of makes me a little too aggressive as a fantasy manager. I think sometimes that can hurt me. And so I feel like I'm in a position now where I'm doing quite well now. And I don't want to suddenly feel like I can do no wrong and start to do those kind of shield and forget to do those kind of shield maneuvers that we've talked about, you know, where you sort of, you just block yourself away from, you block other managers from jumping over you because you've got the players who could really hurt you, you know? And so I want to make sure I keep doing that going in the second half of the season.
I love that your resolution is to not be, you can get cocky. So you're going to not get cocky. Not to have better relationships with your friends and family, but just to still continue to be an even better FPL manager.
The gym one is the real life one. I said real life and fantasy. So those are the two. One is gym, one's fantasy.
I think it's a good point. I too am a podcast addict and just listening to whenever I have my headphones and I'm listening to podcasts. So whenever you get to a point either where you've listened to all of your podcasts or you've just got like 5 minutes to kill and you put on some music, mm-hmm. And it's just like a shot of straight adrenaline. And being a fellow podcast addict, it's funny when you realize, oh, right, music is awesome.
Right, it can actually help. Yeah,
yeah. I can't really play the resolution. I can't. Resolutions are hard for me because I don't keep them. But yeah, I have many resolutions that we don't need to go into that are just like, Brandon, just be better. Be a healthier, better person. So
okay,
that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Okay, what about fantasy wise?
Fantasy wise, in the new year, I mean, we kind of talked about my ideas at the top of the podcast to try and move a little more swiftly. Yeah, I think my hope is that I can continue to just block out the frustration and try to continue to make clear, good decisions. It's like the we go again mentality. I've got to wake up every game week and just try and get the shit moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. All right. That's the lightning round, Brandon. We actually did that one pretty fast this time. Game week 21 kicks off on New Year's Day. Speaking of New Year's resolutions, new year, new second game week of the second half of the season didn't really work there. Kicks off with Brighton Chelsea. Obviously we saw a ton of rotation in game week 20. I think that will that should mean that things are a little more straightforward at game week 21. there were some teams that didn't rotate too much, and maybe those teams are a little more at risk. I mean, Liverpool haven't really rotated at all yet. Chelsea haven't, with Tammy at least. With Pulisic out, I guess the midfield is probably a little more locked in. I don't know. Is anyone else, like anyone you're like maybe Man City? Katie, I think Sterling in particular would be a player who wouldn't be shocking if he didn't start at midweek.
Yeah, I think that's right. Kevin De Bruyne, though, it's just so integral to that City team. It's and it's just not a player that we're going to go without. So whether KDB gets rotated or not is kind of moot. I guess it's a question of captaincy with him, and just doesn't feel like a good fixture for a KDB captaincy, even though it's home.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I think given the break that these teams are going to have after this this run of fixtures, that they can kind of just go full strength, and then the players will have a bit of a break afterward.
As far as captains go, for me, it's really straightforward. Newcastle look awful right now. They have a real defensive issue right now. A lot of injuries, a lot of players come back from injury. Jamie Vardy just had a baby, didn't play a minute over the weekend, and you know he wants to do the ball under the belly baby celebration. So, I mean, it's the second I found out he had a baby, or his wife had a baby, Rebecca Vardy had a baby, yeah. I moved my bus team captain to Jamie Vardy, and that's where it's going to stay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I saw you tweet about the ball under the shirt baby celebration for Jamie Vardy, and I think that if there's one rule that we need to follow, it's if it's a player's birthday, then you have to captain them because players just score.
Yeah, yeah, we did the reason. We crunched the numbers on that a couple of years ago.
So then you've got, has a player had a baby? And it's less a gamble of, is Jamie Vardy going to score? It's more a gamble of, is he going to suck the thumb as the goal celebration? Is he going to put the ball under his shirt? Or is he going to do the Brazilian rock the cradle? I don't know. I'm taking bets.
Maybe he scores three and does all three. What about that? A troika of goal celebrations. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel so locked into that it's like, I just think everyone, I mean, okay, there are other options for sure. KDB at home to Everton, I think, is an option. I mean, despite, you know, you did just mention that he was maybe a little bit of a risk there, but I think there's a decent chance he starts. Just his form is so good right now. He did get subbed off a little early in that Wolves match too. I think Mane or Salah on the Sheffield United match, that would also have the benefit of being the last match of the game week. And it's always kind of fun to captain someone in the last match. It allows you to sort of watch all the other matches thinking, well, as long as my captain comes through, this is going to be okay. So I think that there's a psychological, I mean, that's not a great reason to captain somebody, of course, but it's kind of fun to do that. And what about Rashford or Martial away to Arsenal? I think that's an interesting pick too.
Yeah. Arsenal's defense is shocking. I mean, Callum Chambers made way for Mustafi. Mustafi can't go 90 minutes or less than without being responsible for one of the goals. So
yeah.
And you know, the standard practice with Manchester United right now is that you favor them in more open games against more attacking teams. So them being away at Arsenal will want to be attacking in front of their home crowd. They are generally an attacking team, right? And that plays to the strengths of Manchester United. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of risk there, but I don't hate it as a differential captain.
Yeah, I mean, just if you were trying to be a little different, I think that would be an option. Anything else stand out to you from these fixtures? Anything like that just sort of like, is there a match you're particularly interested in? I guess the I'm sort of weirdly interested in this West Ham match because, as I mentioned before, not just their defense, but their midfield and their forward. I mean, like, there's a lot of interesting players in that team, and you know, it just wasn't clicking under Pellegrini, and I'm not sure that he's to blame for that, but I think that there are some really interesting cheap fantasy assets on that team. So I'm not sure. I don't plan to like sit down and watch that match for 2 hours on New Year's Day, but I am interested to see how things turn out in that one.
Yeah, I mean, the first kickoff, Brighton-Chelsea, I'm actually kind of excited for. Brighton looked they looked awesome against Bournemouth. I mean, granted, it was against Bournemouth, but Aaron Moy just put in one of the performances of the season. I think he'll have a harder time against the Chelsea midfield, but this is an opportunity, like they did against Spurs earlier in the season, for Brighton to really present who they really are. I mean, how that impacts fantasy, I think it's making me even more hesitant to keeping somebody like Tammy. I mean, I'm sure some managers are looking at the next three upcoming fixtures for Chelsea, which are, let's see, Brighton, Burnley, Newcastle. They're not bad, but I do expect that to be a pretty tough match for Chelsea, particularly at the Amex. And then Spurs, Southampton, this is just a huge question mark for me. And like, no result would, well, I guess I'll be surprised and not surprised by any result there.
Yeah.
But both you and I have like kind of divested of Spurs assets. I assume you're going to start Aurier against Southampton.
Yeah, I have him right now. It's kind of interesting actually, because I do have Ryan Fredericks who I still have him, which I shouldn't, but I do. And now I guess I'll keep him because of the double game week. But whether I even start him that game week is you know, to be determined. But I mean, they're home to Bournemouth with a new manager. It wouldn't be a terrible time to start him, considering where Bournemouth are with their attack and their form and things like that. But I still am starting Aurier over, just because I think that he can, he's a really attacking fullback. You know, I mean, he's in the box constantly, and you know, his crosses didn't quite connect Norwich actually defended pretty well. I'll give them credit in the Metro Spurs, but. You know, so yeah, I, again, it's like the whole reason I brought in Aurier really was that I wasn't expecting a lot of clean sheets, but I was hoping to get some assists. And I could do with fewer own goals. I'll be totally honest with you, Brandon.
I think the one thing to look for here is I do think Southampton are going to be a little ragged after all these fixtures. I mean, they've been playing better, and I'm sure a real secret to playing better is working harder. And I suspect that Southampton have been working pretty hard over the last 3 weeks or so. So it could be an opportunity for Spurs they're a notably fit team in the league. Mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity for Spurs to run over them. So a Harry Kane captaincy shout is an interesting one. The one I guess we need to talk about and finish off with would be the Thursday kickoff on January 2nd.
Yeah,
Liverpool hosting Sheffield United. So Mr. Wilder, just incredibly bitter post-Manchester City match today. He felt like he was really done dirty by VAR and also the refereeing decision on the Aguero goal, the ball coming off the referee.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't really know what to make about Sheffield United against the top teams, you know, away at Anfield. This just seems so mighty. How much would it take to convince you to captain a Liverpool player in this match?
I mean, it wouldn't take that much. I mean, because if Jamie Vardy were confirmed out or ill or something like that, then I would captain Sadio Mane. So it wouldn't take that much. I just love Vardy as a captain throughout this game week, and it's hard for me to see past that. I also just recall the Sheffield United match, you know, when they played at Bramall Lane, when Liverpool played there. It was a really, really tough match. They won 1-0. I think it was with a late James Milner goal.
It was a howler that it kind of went through Henderson's legs, if I remember.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Wijnaldum, I think, scored it.
Was it? Yeah. And then actually, Salah actually had a breakaway that he missed. I'm still bitter about that 10 weeks later. I think that Klopp will take that match seriously. It is a little tricky. It depends on how seriously they take. They play Everton in the FA Cup on Sunday, on January 5th. And whether that matters to Klopp or not, I mean, they are whatever they are now. Were they like 15 points ahead or something like that on the table? So
I think it's 13 with a game in hand.
It's a lot. So I don't know. I still think that they're lucky because their matches have been so spaced out. And I actually think, and the commentators were talking about this a little bit today, but that, you know, the Club World Cup thing probably really helped them because they got to be in warm weather for a few days. They won a cup. Klopp actually was able to rotate a lot of his players there too. Trent got a rest and Sadio Mane got a rest. So, you know, so I do think that there's a good chance that they just play a full strength squad on Thursday. But even still, I think I prefer Vardy. But I mean, I would expect Trent and Mane and Salah to all play in that match. Andrew Robertson as a player is probably due for a rest at some point. Wouldn't be surprised if he got a rest at some point.
Yeah, or arrested.
I feel like I just talked for 5 minutes uninterrupted. So do you have anything you want to add or any thoughts?
Yeah, that's all fair. Actually, like the last word I think on the Liverpool Sheffield United match is like, cool, looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, same.
Moving on.
Yeah, that'll be my first day back to work. And just as a reminder, these midweek ones are like happened at work. And my first day back, there's just no way I'm going to be. Actually, it's interesting because Liverpool played last year. The Liverpool Man City game was the first day back at work as well. It was January 2nd match last year too. And so my plan is to go in a full social media blackout starting at 3 p.m. on Thursday and go home and try to watch the match fresh. And the question is always whether I can go completely unspoiled for the next 4 or 5 hours before I can do that. And last year I did it. I genuinely didn't know who won the Liverpool Man City match. And so this year it'll be like a great, like I'm always curious about these people in the UK who do the match of the day challenge where they wait until, you know, 8 p.m. at night or whatever. Is someone match of the day on something like that to find out what all the results are, because how do you, I mean, you must not like be able to log on to Twitter all day. You must not be able to walk by any bars. Like it's gotta be so, so tough.
Yeah. It does take a lot of discipline. Like, you know, the last season of Game of Thrones, if you miss the original airing, like you can't even like look at a headline of national news because it will probably reference some plot twist that happened in Game of Thrones.
Rise of Skywalker.
I don't even know what'll happen if Sheffield United is involved.
Yeah, that's right. It reminds you of the Slack where you set up a spoiler thread for Rise of Skywalker, and then it just spilled over into the regular TV thread. Because everyone was just like, exactly. Yeah, we're just doing this. We're just going to talk about this movie.
Oh, perfect segue bringing up the Slack, Josh. The Slack is a chat forum that you can chat with me and with Josh and bounce ideas around, or also talk with like hundreds of other FPL managers from around the world. It's a cool feature of our Patreon membership. If you want to support the Always Cheating podcast, go to patreon.com/always cheating where you can access that Slack. You get an exclusive podcast each week just for Patreon supporters. We've got t-shirts and extra special leagues, all sorts of fun stuff. So yeah, visit patreon.com/always cheating for more information on how you can support the pod.
Excellent. And Brandon, I'm going to do our producer thank yous. Once again, thank you to all of our producers. And if you'd like to become a Patreon supporter at any level, as Brandon just said, go to patreon.com/always cheating. Producer thank yous. Here we go. Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Babas Kuhn, Jeff Hoosby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner-Lodell, Nick Wright, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Brian Jacobson, Frederick Kean Gransky, Travis West, Alan Creasy, Victor Forberg, Skogang, Paul Herzig, Chris Carter, Martin Savage, Kaya, Kirstine Leleng, Steen Niehaus, Barry McGuire, Peter Boddicktel, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Andy Martin, Lindsay Rostel. And thank you, Lindsay. Actually, thank you to Lindsay's girlfriend, who actually gave her that as a Christmas present, which I thought was so cool. That was awesome. So thank you to
give the gift of being a producer. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. It was very cool. And thank you to our newest patron, Patreon producer, Anton Markov. Thank you to all of you. And if you'd like to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast. And you know, again, if you're not able to become a Patreon supporter, or just don't want to, but you want to do something to support the podcast, a review on any of those places helps people to find the podcast and helps us tremendously. You can also follow us on social media. We're at Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. On Instagram, we're at Hail Cheaters as well. Facebook is facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. And to find this and more, Brandon, where do they go?
Go to our website, alwayscheating.com. We love it. That's where we update you with screenshots of the top 10 of the Always Cheating Super League. And there's also a store where you can get mugs and t-shirts and sweatshirts for those late holiday gifts. Josh, the next time we talk, it's going to be the year 2020.
Wow. That's Brandon, you're gonna have to get those resolutions buttoned down. You got just a couple days.
I'm all over the shop. I'm at sixes and sevens with those resolutions. It's true.
All right. Well, good luck to everybody on January 1st. And we'll be back next week with one of our favorite podcasts of the season. I'm already looking forward to it. Brandon, I will talk to you soon.
All right, Poku forever.